Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and T. Quiller, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Welcome to episode 188 of
The Inexplicable Dumb Show.
I'm T. Quillen.
I'm John Malden.
It's Humana again.
Humana part deux.
Part deux. What do we got this week?
Well, we got, I'm not going to list everybody's name because there was like a ton of people who collaborated on Fissures, but we're going to talk to those guys and let them introduce themselves.
Okay.
And then we'll tag that up again with Deborah Stein, who wrote Heist, which was the Apprentice Intern Company piece for the year.
Excellent. So, that was at the Art Museum, right?
Yes, 21C. Yeah. We had, David and I happened upon native Louvillians who acted as our tour guide through the evening and various inebriated stages. So, so we got to see the best of both worlds.
Also, always fun.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's do it. Want to stay current with the Inexplicable Dumb Show?
It's quick and it's easy and it's free.
Click the subscribe button at inexplicabledumbshow.com
and you'll never have to miss an episode.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play, in the gutter, of course.
Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater!
Alright, so we're interrupting breakfast here for several guests. So just got to go around the room and give us your name.
Dominique Serran.
We'll skip the eater.
Dominic Orlando.
Two Dominics.
Deborah Stein.
Surrounded by Dominics, right? How you doing? How you feeling?
Well, often surrounded by Dominics.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's just start talking about the show then. I want to talk the process, how the group of writers got together, how this developed, and then ultimately how it sort of ended up here and what's next for it and that sort of thing. So since we have a group...
Please, we were up to a five last night. That's a big, fat question.
Well, I'll start off like that, and I'm going to bring the algebra in a minute. So we'll do calculus in a little bit. So...
Dominique and I have been talking for a long time about doing something, I would say it was a bunch of different things happened at the same time, and it seemed like this would work, and so, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dominique wanted to work with some playwrights, and so we basically got three playwrights other than myself that I knew would be work well in a room together, and that's how that part of it started. I can't speak from his side of it. That was your cue.
It's too early for me to take that.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say, to speak to your point, the fact that it was amazing to me that you had the four playwrights, but yet it felt very uniformed thought processes, and it was, I liked how that meshed together, and there would seem to be a singular sort of narrative voice in a way, you know. It wasn't it didn't appear to me that it was four people and all of a sudden we have diverging ideas and going in different directions. As far as the working together as a group, I thought that was very effective. So,
Thank you.
It's like an editing room.
Yeah.
They basically pass the pages around the table and everybody changes the room. So eventually it became its own thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I
think that also, it was also about something that we had to do through that, the early steps of the process, and I feel like you really sort of were the sort of the ear for the voice in terms of being outside of the group of writers and really guiding that editing. And that part of what we needed to agree on in the sort of first half of the process, I think, is what this voice was going to be like, what the style of the piece was. Because it's not... People who know individual pieces of the four of us don't come and say, oh, yeah, I see that sort of... That's a Corey piece and that's
right,
a Tony.
Right.
That it's actually like a fifth voice that exists in the piece.
But I think you're right that it's the fact that we had Dominique as an outside ear, because we never talked about it. Not that I remember. We never talked about, well, this is what it should sound like, or it's not like somebody wrote something and we were like, oh, no, that's not the right voice. It sort of just happened. And I think that a lot of that is because there was a filter. There was a place where it was all going.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A drain, if you will.
A drain.
A funnel. Yeah, a funnel of some kind.
Funnel's probably a better metaphor than a drain.
So, yeah.
How was that writing process of being kind of in the melting room? And I think we have...
No, here they are. Come on in. Come. Don't be crazy. Come in. You can ask them right now. Ask them
ask them.
Okay, so...
The first question was really long, and we just sort of sat here.
They
were like, that's just too... That's,
they said they came...
What is this doing here?
Oh, I had breakfast.
I know, yeah. They,
I had breakfast and she gave me
no
trouble.
No reason to get that out.
Yeah. Well, and then I brought you this one. This is their latest issue. It's really kind of weird.
They're trying to compete with XM.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Maxim.
Is that a bikini edition. Episode?
What is it? Yeah,
exactly.
It's their calendar.
Weird. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to spread this around here.
Welcome, you guys. That's a nice
picture. So introduce yourselves, and we're glad that you're here, and... discussing the finer points of literature, modern literature.
Hi, I'm Victoria Stewart. I'm one of the writers on Fishers.
I'm
Corey Hinkle, one of the writers on Fishers.
So we were talking about the process of writing some, because we were discussing how while they were enjoying the magazine, we were discussing the uniform voice that appeared, even though you had the four playwrights.
Yeah.
So my question is, how is that process working for you? I mean, what was it like going from being, you know, creating your own stuff in your own worlds to suddenly having people go, well, I don't know about that, or I like this, or, you know, the self-editing, I guess. What was that like?
Well, it was a really fascinating process, but we never really created anything in our own worlds. We were sort of all always in the same world, I think, from the very beginning. I mean, there was never... We spent time alone because we took things away from the room
that
we had created together, and then we wrote it alone and brought it back. But the editing process was really difficult because you give something to Dominic Orlando and he'll completely rip it apart.
All the great work that
you did gets destroyed. Then you're like, well, wait a minute, but this is good.
I was the same way. I want to settle this once and for all. I was the same way with my own work. And if you look at the play, the only person who really wouldn't let certain things be cut was Mr. Hinkle. There's huge chunks of Hinkle in there. Interrupted Hinkle because he would get really pissed.
You're totally
with
a collective
color. Well, look, I can't. He started it. I can't just sit here.
Interesting is that we'd work on a scene and we'd read it, and obviously there were some problems in the writing. So one of them would pick up the scene and come back the next day, and the only thing that worked to the scene was gone.
It's true. A couple times in rehearsal here, I think we made some changes. We were like, let's go home and fix this. And we did not fix it. And I think we got so far away, we're like, what did we do?
We had to go back to the very original idea and be like,
what was the idea to begin with? Because we got way off track here.
And actually, like in the beginning, it was a lot of this, like people taking idea home and working on it. And then as the piece started developing, we knew what it was. We started writing the four of us around a table
in the same way, which was great. So when you talk about
we broke it, like, actually, like at those moments when we were here, it was like we all broke it, so there was no blame to go around.
I'm joking. We all messed it up. Yeah, we did.
And really, that was the best way of writing, because there was no sense of I'm going to bring this in and I wonder what people are going to say. Like to have it all settled before it even got onto the page was actually the best.
That
was really great. That was really, that's the whole, I would say the whole second half of the piece was written that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I think also what's important is that as opposed to writing and then delivering a piece that's finished. The whole point of the piece was to develop it as we wanted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it allows you as, I mean, for all of us at any degree, even the actors who are improvising, to change your mind constantly because the room is changing and the room is going in a different direction, mm-hmm. Which you can't really do when you're writing on your own. You can do at a, you know what you're writing about, that's set. Yeah. And then it's a question of like, how do you make alterations in the room, you like something lives on stage or doesn't. This was more about the stage itself, mm-hmm. what happened on the stage. Mm-hmm. The gesture and the writing came as one of the elements, but it wasn't the departing element.
Right.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Well, what's next for...
Coffee.
there's a producer here who's getting us to develop a sitcom, the four of us, so we're really excited about that. We're really excited about that. Yeah. We're going to make it kind of like Slings and Arrows, right?
I think so.
It's about a French director in Minneapolis, so it's like a fish out of water thing. It's going to be really great.
Fish out of water story.
You know, people love that. They love that.
But there's a lot of physical humor.
Yeah, there's physical humor.
Kind of like perfect,
yeah, fanciful.
Yeah, yeah, it's more like Fawlty Towers meets Slings and Arrows. Yeah. Kind of mashup.
I might be in it.
Yeah.
But he won't be. There will be no credit for him.
No.
He'll just show up.
He'll just show
right,
up.
Right. Good. Good. That's the best way, right?
Yeah.
Well, what was the overall time period of for this project?
Oh, like 15 years? Right? How long?
No, like a full year. I mean, we started talking about it. It's been a year and a half
since we first
met.
Since
the first conversation.
And started talking about it, yeah.
But in real time, what is it?
It was like
workshop time is five weeks, right?
4 or 5 weeks in the spring, and then a week in January, and then 4 weeks here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So how did... what's the connection between all of you? How did you...
These guys
have... Oh, let me see.
We're
collectively creative. Let me see that.
Oh, dear God.
They have a garden.
Where we grow
plays.
And like any
on an antiquated typewriter.
Like any garden, if you put enough down, it just, things just grow.
Some will grow eventually.
Can you say that on me?
We'll mask that. That's a fun picture.
It's a weird picture.
We all look really stoned.
It's like kids join the theater and get stoned.
Get totally stoned.
You have a shovel and what is that? Rutabakers? What is that
exactly
back there?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never noticed that Dominic looks like he's like
a
TV producer from LA. You look kind of bronzed.
It's true, actually.
It's true.
It must have been the summer. I must have been like, I get all color. Yeah, I really do. Especially in that orange wig, that orange shirt. I don't know if I
So we all run a theater company.
Wow, that was really stoned.
You really look hot.
We all met through the Playwright Center. All came to Minneapolis.
Three of us were Jerome Fellows together, which is outrageous.
Which is so funny.
And then I joined the band a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly. She's the drummer.
She was a replacement drummer.
Yeah, exactly. She kind of was, actually.
That's true.
Well, thank you guys for coming in and sitting with us. And
thanks for having us.
I hope you actually got some good.
Yeah, I hope you got some out of that.
You're gonna have to edit the hell out of that.
It's the inexplicable dumb show, so that gives us a great license to let it roll, so to speak.
Cool.
So, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right. So, in a much gentler, calmer room now, we have. Tamara Stein with us. Survived the onslaught from Fishers, and thank you for staying with us and talking about Heist and wow, what a wild and crazy show. And well, let's just how did you get duped into doing this? No, I mean,
how did I dupe Actors Theater into letting me do it?
Okay,
It's a kind of play I've wanted to make for a really long time, and I've done it in smaller scales. I've done things about people moving around spaces, but it's not the only kind of thing I've done, and I've only had a chance to do it twice before and on a much smaller scale. So this has been sort of a dream experience to be able to be in a space like 21C with the resources of Actors Theater with the 22 amazing and totally game apprentice actors. It's just been like totally extraordinary. All of the design staff from the theater. The question of how it came about is that the director of the show, Sean Daniels, who's the associate artistic director here, mm-hmm. he and I were talking about theater in non-traditional spaces. And I think at around the same time, he and Mark were talking about how to shake up what the apprentice show is, because it's been kind of the same thing for a couple of years.
And you were here last year.
Yeah, I wrote for it last year. It was this anthology where they commissioned six writers to write short, like 2 or 3 minute pieces.
Thematically grouped, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess Mark and Sean were talking about how to shake it up for this year. And so Sean and I started talking about, like, well, if we were to do a site-specific show anywhere in Kentucky, where would we do it? And actually, like, within 4 minutes, we were like, oh my God, an art heist at 21C. And it was actually the first idea that we had, and it seemed so perfect and ideal for both the city and the resources available and the partnership between 21C and the theater. And then, like, unbeknownst to me, wheels started spinning here. Like, you know, Sean started having meetings and talking to people and getting people excited. And the idea itself sort of got people excited, that it seemed as right to other people as it did to us. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we were doing it. And I still, now that it's over, I still can't believe they let me do it.
Well, what's the challenge of creating the site-specific stuff?
Everything about it. Like, you know, it's like everything. Theater is challenging already because it involves so many people, and it involves a sort of like superhuman effort for something that then needs to seem easy and magical.
Right.
And to do that in a space that's not equipped with all of the sort of like tricks and gadgets that make a theater work.
Right.
Also, you know, it's a lot of it is actually about, like, we called it the dramaturgy of house management. It's about how to move people around.
Right, because,
and that the architecture of the space affected the structure of the play. Like, you know, by the end of September, we knew what the story was, but how we were going to tell that story needed to be figured out before the story could be told, that I couldn't write all those scenes until I knew where they were happening and how they were being told and how the audience was experiencing it, whether you were experiencing it as an audience of one, an audience of 10, an audience of 30, or an audience of 60, or an audience of 250.
Right.
Because all of those things happen in the show.
Right. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed the getting into the groups and, getting kind of to see a little bit more of the kind of all the characters interact. I understand why it's a draw, because you kind of will want to come back and get in somebody else's group and, you know, see where that journey takes you. So I thought that was a fascinating device. I mean, and what a great, I mean, I've never been to 21C before, but what an outstanding venue to house all that stuff in, because it already has all these weird, and you know, peeing in the men's room, but yet looking in the hallway kind of things, you know, mm-hmm. It's very strange. So you came, what was it like working with apprentices? Was it a similar sort of, did you have an audition per se, just to see who is what and who could be the Russian person and the English person?
Well, it's actually the opposite. It's that, like, they kind of came up with who they wanted to be. We started the very first rehearsal. We brought in a list of, like, I mean, it must have been like 75 different character types that were sort of gleaned from different heist movies that we spent all summer watching as many heist movies as we could and writing down all the different kinds of characters that you see in these movies. And we handed out this list of, like, you know, I mean, I don't remember how many, but it's about like 50 or 70 characters to all the apprentices. And then we started doing like character building exercises where they had to get up and introduce themselves and create a character based on these like 4-word character descriptions.
Right.
And a lot of those characters from that first workshop are still in the play. And the story developed based on that, so that there was no Paul Vista, there was no Russian family until after that weekend.
Oh, wow.
And that sort of came into place. And then we started thinking about what the story was after
that.
And, you know, and there was, like, you know, some of the actors have characters they created that very first day, and some actors have characters that we sort of over time were like, you know what, the play really needs this kind of person, and we think you'd be really great at it. Also, the different actors have different sets of skills.
Right.
So, So it was really a real back and forth. And they really were like creators of the piece.
Wow. Yeah. We talked to Christopher Diaz from last year, and he's telling me you had all these post-it notes all over your apartment and everything.
All the storylines.
Well, it's like, you know, when you make it's sort of a screenwriting technique. If you make these index cards that, mm-hmm. that represent each image and each story point, and each idea. And because this was actually like it is a film genre that we're putting into three dimensions. Right. And because the story was going to be told in a non-linear way, I needed a way to understand what the story was. Otherwise, I was going to get totally lost because the story is so giant.
Right.
So I put the story in like chronological linear order on my kitchen wall, and we also had one up here in the rehearsal room. That we could look at every day and be like, oh yeah, that happens before this, or then if we discovered we needed to change the order of things chronologically, we could move it. And having that be that orderly allowed us to then sort of make like the second tier of charts. Like there's so many Excel spreadsheets involved in the show because it's like that's how we know what's happening when and where it's happening and how long it needs to be. That everything is like timed within an inch of its life as well. Because things, you know, four things happening at the same time all the time.
Yeah. Right. That was, I mean, I just through the experience, but sitting there thinking, oh my God, the organization, not only in the script, but in the implementation of the script, must have been a mammoth undertaking. So I heard somebody say there was nine, you know, like assistant stage managers or something.
And they're all just as cops, so that they can like go in and troubleshoot at any time and not break the reality of the play.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were okay. That makes all, sense.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Because it was like okay, so yeah, there they go. Because
there's eight different versions of the show that run the same every night.
Right.
And each of them is different. Then within that, there's like little mini differences within those.
Yeah, little variations.
Yeah.
If you go with this person, then you go with that.
Yeah, which again would be the draw to see it multiple times. But wow, what a fascinating take on the Apprentice show. You know, I appreciate the thought process and taking it outside of, I won't say norm, but the box, maybe.
Thank you.
So I really enjoyed it, and I thought, man, that is a major undertaking. There must be a lot of hair pulling and migraines. So
I had a lot of fun. It's also like the most fun any of us ever had working on a show.
Oh,
that it was
that's
both
cool.
Like the Sean and I would say that this is the hardest thing we've ever done, and you know, one of the best times we've ever had working on a show.
Well, that's cool. So I'm going to before you go, I'm going to ask you the dreaded "What's next for you?" question.
The actual honest truth is I'm going on vacation to Mexico with my sister.
Nice. Nice. Well, after heist and everything else, I think you deserve your...
I'm going to have a margarita.
Well, at least have two. And I always throw this out because young David here is the intern for me. Second year running. So
yes.
He's...
Awesome.
He hasn't improved much over the year. No, he has. But he's a young playwright. Has won the Regional 4 Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival one act
That's
competition.
Awesome.
And so I'm asking all the writers bits of advice. What would you say to someone like young David here who's starting out in his career?
Hello, Dave.
He's the silent partner in this. He's my silent Bob.
Without knowing what your work is like or what kind of theater you like doing, I guess the most important thing for me has been to find my people. Mm-hmm. What Paula Vogel calls your fellow travelers. Like find the people that you communicate well with, that you feel like you share, and both an aesthetic and also like a value system, that it's not just about the art, it's also about like how you work with people and what you want out of the experience and what you want to give the audience, and that like find those people and keep them close. And I tend to work with the same people over and over, and I feel like I have my family of collaborators that is growing, and I work with new people every year, but I actors, directors, designers, it's hard to find those people. And that anytime I've made a choice to go with someone who's like a bigger name or who might like open a professional door for me, it has always like that door has slammed in my face and it has not gone well. I mean, not, but it just like hasn't gone well. It hasn't, I haven't gotten out of it what in theory you know, the gods of networking tell you you're supposed to.
It wasn't that magical door flying open.
No, and it's like, you know, some both Heist and Fishers are, you know, projects with people that I'm doing with people who are very dear to me, who I've been working with and who I've known and admired as artists for many, many years. And I'm at the Humana Festival, and it's like, and that's crazy. And you had asked me 10 years ago if I ever could, well, I wouldn't have thought I'd be at the Humana Festival, and certainly not with two totally crazy outside the box ensemble based pieces. And somehow I got here. So.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, whether it's about forming a company or finding a director who really understands your work or, you know, an actor who you're always writing a role for, I think, you know, keep those people close. Yeah.
All right. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good luck, man. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thanks for stopping by.
Sure, you bet.
All right.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show like I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
So I'd like to thank the gang of Fishers and Deborah Stein for talking with us about Heist. So,
excellent.
Next week we're going to have kind of a fun grouping. We have Dan O'Brien, who wrote The Cherry Sisters Revisited,
okay,
which was an interesting historical piece about the Cherry Sisters, who apparently were from Iowa and decided they wanted to be in vaudeville and did vaudeville acts, but were so horrible that people laughed and made fun of them, but they sort of didn't, either were self-delusional or didn't get that they were very bad to the end. But they made it all the way to Broadway.
Wow.
Hammerstein Sr. brought them to Broadway to be to be mocked, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Wow.
So it's an interesting story. It has... we have a Governor's School tie with that particular show.
Excellent.
Music director for that show, Stephen Malone, is going to be coming down and music writing for Governor's School.
Oh, cool.
So,
awesome.
We got a connection there. And then we're going to be... so we have Dan O'Brien and the Cherry Sisters Revisited, and we're going to have a interesting interview with the Rude Mechs team from Austin.
All right.
And they did a show called The Method Gun, which was based on... A guru from the 60s, acting, teaching stuff.
This is the one you've kind of told me about already.
This is the one that was...
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, this year all the shows were good, but this was the one that was probably my favorite.
Your favorite.
If I can say that.
Awesome.
But, I mean,
well, you can.
Okay.
You're entitled to your opinion.
Thank you.
Take charge, John.
I did.
Well,
I mean,
there you go. Hey, we'll see you.
Bye.
That's encouraging.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No East. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.